Fish number 27053.
Mr. Dre, reel 16. Now, what happened when you got to this to the field hospital or advanced?
Yes,
field
advanced hospital? Field hospital, I think it was. Well, we got in there. It was night time by this time, the night of the 7th of December, and they were medical corps, as you see, staff there, and one of them come up to me, and he started speaking to me, and I detected a West Country accent, and I said to him, "You come from the West Country?" He said, "Yeah, Devon." And I said, "Oh yeah, where in Devon?" He said, "Morton Hampstead." Well, Morton Hampstead is 3 miles from this bungalow, just up the valley here. I said, "Goodness gracious, I know Morton, and it was so good." I said to him, "Do you know my eldest brother had married a girl from the village?" "Oh yes," he said, "he used to play for Morton Hampstead football team before he went in the army." I said, "That's right." He said, "Yeah, I played with George, that's my brother." And he made such a fuss of me, anything I wanted, he said, yeah, that's so, make sure, yeah, everything goes through, so they notify your mother and that sort of thing. And he made such a fuss of me, but then I was only there 48 hours in this hospital, in this event. Then they were going to fly us back. We were going back to they sort them out whether they're long term. They know, I don't near enough, if they're long term, whether they finish soldiering or what. So they must have thought, well, he's going to be out for quite a while.
And what was the state of your wounds? What exact wounds?
Well,
did you
I was
have?
Wounded in the left knee, on right on top of the patella there. Not much. There's a piece of shrapnel in my left knee, but it had blown a hole through my ankle. It had gone right through my ankle from one side to the other. And
are you just showing? I mean, you've still got enormous great holes in your right ankle now, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, they give me a bit of a pension for it now. Not much. But
and
they,
through your knee as well?
Well, it hit and it hadn't gone through. Look, see that cut there?
Yeah.
Wasn't very much. It had hit me there, and there was a piece of shrapnel dug in there.
So that was much less serious.
Oh, that wouldn't.
It
wouldn't
was the
have
ankle
brought, that wouldn't. Yeah. Well, it had smashed the bottom of the tibia and fibia, and certain bones there, and to all events, say, are we running?
Yeah.
And it had smashed the bones, so back I went, and I went to the 93rd British General Hospital in Barry, between Barry and Barletta, where I'd but embarked on the way up to join the 56th London Division, and that's way down, level with Naples sort of thing, on the Adriatic side. So I was in the 93rd British General Hospital.
Still December then?
Hmm?
That would still be in December.
Yes, I'd have been back there about December the 10th or 11th. On December the 15th, I had my 18th birthday. And I then had the Christmas. The Christmas cards had caught up with me from my mother. I'd been able to write to her and tell her, or she had been notified by the War Office that I was wounded and in hospital. And we had a jolly little Christmas there, and it was quite nice.
What was done for you? What birthday and Christmas celebrations?
Nothing.
You have?
Nothing birthday, of course.
Tell me about Christmas.
I didn't tell anyone because I was still a. You know, I never told anyone that I was too young to be in the army. And, well, the Christmas, the sisters came round and the doctors and served us. We had turkey, believe it or not. Yeah, they had turkey or poultry of some description and roast, or just a traditional sort of Christmas. And the sisters came in, and they used to have to come in the wards every day and dress all the wounds. You see, it was in a surgical wards, and it wasn't very pleasant because the smell was terrible in the wards because all the men had gunshot wounds, you see. And although they were cleaned every day, there is a smell about them. So the wards didn't smell very nice because of being in this surgical wards. And I had a big cage over my legs and plaster down through the legs. They'd plastered it all and this sort of thing. But I wasn't allowed out of bed or anything like that. But the sisters came in, and there was one, Sister Gordon, come from Barnstable in North Devon. Nice red-headed girl. And she, And she made a fuss of me because I was Devonian, and I suppose because I was a young baby-faced young lad. And but they were very good, and they gave us trifles and bits and pieces that they'd got up. So it was quite a merry little Christmas for us.
Now, how were you feeling in yourself? I mean,
I felt good then.
Did you know you weren't going to lose? I mean, you could have. I mean, it's
they
nasty.
Did.
It looks nasty.
Yeah,
now,
they
it?
Did. They did contemplate amputating my foot. Yeah, I'm glad they didn't. But that, what they'd done later on, there they were just healing the wound, and.
But you were all right in your.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I was quite happy. I used to write my letters and.
Were you happy to be out of the fighting?
Yes,
or?
I was. I was, yes, I was really. Although I now, in retrospect, I know there wasn't a lot of heavy fighting after that. Where I could have mastered that all right. Wouldn't have worried me too much. Won a lot of it, once they got over the Po Valley, and I'd have rather liked to have been in Italy when it surrendered and all the
when
all
the Germans surrendered.
Yeah, when the Germans surrendered and they went up into Austria and had a lovely winter skiing and playing about with the Austrian girls. I wish I'd have had all that. But what had happened, while we were at Macerata, they knew the war was coming close, as I told you, and they were army were advertising on the what they call detail board. They wanted recruits for the police. They wanted them for the Palestinian police, the Malaysian police, and the British South African police. I had an idea. I'd like the police force after the war, and I wanted to go in the British South African police. So I'd already filled out papers, and that had been, I was going to where they'd gone, wherever, to be interviewed with the possibility of being that. I suppose when the war ended, they'd have had all these men that are volunteering, and they'd have interviewed us and made a selection who they wanted. The British South African Police, because I wanted to go to Rhodesia, because the British South African Police were the same police in Rhodesia, and that's where I thought I would end my. I'd like to spend my civilian life, you see, out there. But it wasn't to be. But
so you're in hospital after
yeah,
Christmas. What
yeah.
happens next?
Well, the spring came and it was lovely. We had a canteen and we had two or three Russian boys, that they'd. There was Yugoslav lads as well in there. That there was these Russians had been in the German army, but they say that the Germans had recruited them for the pioneers and one thing or another. But then they were taken prisoner, so they were waiting to go back. You know, there was a lot of trouble after the war when sending these Russians and that back. But they were with us, and we used to buy a bucket of tea. From the naffy, there was a naffy on this, so we'd have a whip round, and one of these Russian boys would go down and he would ask for so many cakes and so much tea, and it was like a bucket they brought the tea back in, and they used to push the beds outside into the sun, because it went on and on, you see. By this time, it was now, I was there, I don't know, 12 weeks in that hospital. Every bit of 12 weeks.
So from December through to
March. Right. They then decided that I was going to be evacuated to England, but they were in no hurry because they wanted all the beds and that in England for the people from Normandy and the British Liberation Army, as they call it, BLA. And they had the supplies and that down there, nothing desperate, no heavy fighting going on, bringing a lot of casualties down. So they stayed there and they decided I was going to be sent back to England, so they then shipped me from the 93rd British General Hospital to the 103rd British General Hospital just outside Naples. And talking of the 93rd, when I told you we went to Caserta Cemetery, there was a nursing sister buried in there of the 93rd British General Hospital, and she had died just after V-Day. How she died, I don't know, but she must have been in that hospital when I was there. I didn't know her, of course, because there was wards for all sorts of things. But that sister was there. But they got me to the 103rd British General Hospital outside Naples.
That's March.
Yeah, and so I was there right through April. Well, nearly to the end of April. And they decided to send me home. And so a whole there weren't only me, there was a convoy of ambulances, and they came and collected us all one morning and took us down to docks at Naples, and we were put aboard the El Nil, the Egyptian El Nil, a Red Cross ship.
E-L and then...
yeah, E-L.
And then N-I-S.
El Nil, yeah, it was the Nile, really. It's an Egyptian
sorry.
Ship.
yeah.
But it was in Egyptian language, the El Nil. But it's the Nile in English translation, but it's an Egyptian ship, and they'd used it for Red Cross. She was painted white with a green band along the side and a big Red Cross. So off we went. And that was lovely weather in the Mediterranean. And by this time...
This is April, is it, or is it May?
April. No, it was April, or very end of April, because we went into Gibraltar and picked up some men in there. And we were there VE Day on the 8th of May. Then you know, they'd put a walking iron on me, plaster with a piece of steel running down it from the knee, a knee strap, so that I took the weight on the knee instead of the ankle, and I could hobble about on deck. So up on deck we went, and we slept in. We had special beds on this boat. It was a bed, but like a hammock, so that it didn't sway when the ship was rough. Your bed was perfectly still. So if you felt seasick, lay on your bed, and it was just like being in on dry land. But there were some terrible cases on there. There was two lads with their bottom jaw shot away, completely missing, and they used to feed them with special feeders. But they didn't segregate them or anything like that. They made sure they were with us, in among us, because when men are wounded and that sort of thing, they accept one another, you see, and they don't feel it so much. Later we had counselling, if you like. We did later on, and I'll tell you. But there was two lads with their jaws missing. There was one man with no legs and no hands, and he scrambled around like a monkey, and he used to smoke cigarettes. He had a piece of wire wrapped around one wrist with a little bit coming up on a little tiny loop. People used to push a cigarette through the little loop, and he'd hold it up to his mouth and he'd light the cigarette, and he'd run around and he'd scramble around on deck. And orderlies helped them, of course, as well, but he had no hands and no legs. Now, you know, when you think about it, what happened to them in civilian life, God knows. But there was lots of men with no legs, no arm. There was a few pregnant ATS girls aboard it, believe it or not, come because there was ATS girls were out in Naples and in Rome by that time when we were well up north. And, it was pretty good. And we got home and they took us...
Were there any celebrations for VE Day? I forgot, you know...
No. None at all.
So what happened when you got back? Mm. What was this?
Well, they landed us at Liverpool. And they asked us where we come from. They carried us all off on stretchers again, put us on a Red Cross train, and they took us to East Kilbride, believe it or not, up near Glasgow or somewhere. East Kilbride in Scotland. And the ladies on the station at Liverpool was terrific. They came with cakes and tea and chocolate for us. It was the Church Army and the... all the different people that rang in and plied us with the cakes and made a fuss of us. Up we went, got up there, and the orderlies were all medical corps, and they were arrogant and horrible men that in this hospital, the way they treated us wounded fellas getting off, you know. And at all events, they then
in
were...
In what way? What were they doing?
Well, nasty. There. You wanted some, no, you're not having that, or do this, or do that, and you know. You're supposed to be in bed and all bossy sort of thing, and they're only your private soldiers. But they'd never seen a shot fired in anger. I hadn't been outside England, you know. And we didn't like them at all, the medical orderlies. Well, we weren't there many days because then the people of England were getting together and having these parties for VE Day and one thing or another. And it was about 10 days before England really, they cheered and cried and clapped when the news came it had ended, but they then got themselves together and had street parties and that. So they decided to get us home as soon as we could. And I'm talking of what I didn't like them. This sergeant in the medical said to me, If you can't put a bloody foot on that, a boot on that bloody foot and walk, you're not going home. That's his very words to me. And they cut the plaster off, and there were still weeping and dressings on there, and they bought a brand new pair of boots to me, and he had decreed that they should be a size bigger because my leg was with the bandage and that. And they never cut the boot or anything for me. They got it on my foot, and they said, and I hobbled with a stick that they'd given me. They gave me a stick thing, and I hobbled, and I was determined to make out I could, and they said, all right. So the next day, they took us down to the station. They put us on another train. I don't think it wasn't a Red Cross train. I'm pretty sure it wasn't. But there might have been Red Cross carriages on it. And believe it or not, I don't know why, but they brought the train right down through England, dropping off chaps at different places, and they dropped me at Newton Abbot. There wasn't only me, there was about three of us from Newton Abbot coming down, and they dropped us at Newton Abbot. Well, I couldn't walk up from Newton Abbot to the bus. There was no train going out. I got to catch the bus, a little bus. And a taxi driver at Newton Abbot said to me, where are you going? I said, I've got to go up the bus depot, jump in. He put me in his taxi, drove me up to the top of the town bus. It was a single deck above. And there was I was in uniform, of course, and hobbling along, and it was obviously something wrong with me. And there was a military hospital out here at Moreton Hampstead, and there was a doctor, medical corps, in uniform, doctor. And he said to me, you wounded? I said, yeah, I've just come back from Italy. He got on the coach and on the bus, public bus, and he said to the driver, he's going on there. And he put my kit on for me, an officer. He was a captain or something. And he said, and he sat in a seat behind me and got me out to Lusley. And then I didn't know what to do. And there's a farmer in Lusley, was in the village. And he said, hang on a minute, John, I'll give you. And he had a car. And he used to do a bit of a milk round near us. And he put me in his car and drove me home. Because I lived in the big house down opposite here. That's Higher Coombe that's on there. And he drove me home. And that's how I got home. And then, you know, I met my family and that. But that wasn't the end of the story, mind. I wasn't mended. I went to the doctor and he made give me some bandage, I think. But I then had to go to a Ministry of Pensions hospital. I went down to the Atlantic Hotel in Newquay in Cornwall. That's where.
No, you hadn't been discharged.
Oh, no. I'm still a soldier. But I'd leave, you see. So I had to report back to Newquay, to the Atlantic Hotel. All the wounded from the West Country went to the Headland, the Atlantic, and the railway hotels in Newquay. That was the hospitals, three hospitals down there. And they decided. I'd been at home here. I'm jumping. First of all, I had to report to the Royal Devon and Exeter Hospital at Exeter. There was a Victory Ward. It was a military ward on the Royal Devon and Exeter Hospital. Went there. And they bandaged me and one thing and another. But they said that what happens when a bone is smashed by shrapnel, it dies like wood. And although they can chip it away, then more bone, and so they have to keep operating and chipping away this dead bone and one thing and another. So they gave me, they said, you'll have to have an operation again. But they gave me a bit of leave, and in July, they decided to put me for a medical board, and they sent me to a nearby military hospital, and they discharged me from the army in July. I think it was my wife's birthday, July 26th. 1945, and they discharged me from the army.
Now, what happened when you were discharged? Was there a formal procedure you had to go through?
They asked you a lot of questions. They examine you, but it's no examination at all, really. And then they sent us to Taunton. They took us to Taunton in ambulances, and there was the West Country demobilisation depot. And they then gave us a suit, a mac, pair of shoes, a trilby hat, and a suit and a shirt, I think, perhaps a pair of underpants, or perhaps we kept our army one. You were allowed to keep some. I kept one battle dress of my army, my great coat, and one thing or another. But that was me out of the army. But I'm still not out of the woods yet. So then.
Now, did you have a pension then?
No. Oh well, yeah, when they've discharged me, no.
Presumably you were discharged as unfit for service.
That's 100% disabled. So, but they're keeping me, aren't they? You see, I was in. They sent me home, and they gave me like army equivalent army money still, but I couldn't have been on their payroll. I must admit, but there wasn't a pension as such, and I was then told to report from there. I had to report to Newquay. So I went down to this Atlantic Hotel. We had to wear a hospital blue the same in the ministry hospitals. But instead of wearing the red tie, you know that the red tie was to tell the publicans you was wounded and they shouldn't serve you drink. But the black ties, what we wore with the blue suits and the white shirts in the ministry, showed that we were wounded servicemen, but they were more tolerant. We were allowed to go in and have a drink in a pub or something. And the people around were marvellous. They really were.
You're talking about the assessment at the Atlantic Hotel.
Hmm?
You're talking about the assessment at the Atlantic Hotel.
Yeah,
what did they do?
They decided they're going to open the foot up and take away some bone. And they decided that the ankle joint would never be right again. And they'd done what they call an arthrodesis. They took a piece of bone out of me, one part. And they grafted a little chip of bone into me ankle joint, which fixed the ankle joint. That's why I can't bend my ankle. It's fixed. And then they sewed it up. Well, then what happened? I don't know why. I'm in the bed one morning. I had terrible pain, and I'd asked the sister. It was hurting me, and they cut the plaster off. I was in plaster right to the hip. They cut it off. And they bandaged it on again, but, you know, just bandaged it. And this morning, it was breakfast time, and I felt very easy. And one of the chaps in the next bed said to the sister, and he looking at under my bed. And I got a bit worried. And I leaned over and looked under my bed, and there's a big pool of blood, and it's dripping from the mattress of my bed. And the sister come running in, and I'm making some remark, and she said, "You lay down and keep still now." And they put a tourniquet on my leg, put a tourniquet on. And what had happened, all the stitching had burst on my wound, and I had what they call a secondary hemorrhage. And I'd lost so much blood, they couldn't operate or anything, and they brought, and I remember they doped me with something. And they took me into the theatre, and they had got a young girl from Newquay came up. She was a donor for blood, and they gave me a direct transfusion from her arm to mine. Don't ask me how they do it, but they did. This girl gave me a pint of her blood. She must have had the same group as me, and they must have, these volunteers in Newquay, or where the military hospitals were, must have been there on standby in case they were needed. And she came up, this girl, and gave me this direct blood transfusion. Then they were able to put me out, and they stitched it all up and one thing and another, I suppose, and saw to it, and I had some blood drip, and I had plasma, a lot of plasma. But that ran right through then till right, I was just about getting out of bed at that Christmas of 1946. Well, then they said, I got a bit better, and they sent me home, and then they said...
So all that time you were at the Atlantic Hotel Hospital,
yeah, were you? Yeah, must have been 2 months, I suppose, every bit. They then sent me home because the hotels, this time, you see, the war was over, and the hotels wanted their property back. So they decided, the Ministry of Pensions, to take over a hospital at Taunton, which had been an American hospital built there during the war, the Musgrove Park Hospital. And so all the West Country chaps that had been discharged from the forces had to report, and they hadn't been discharged to civilian life, had to report there. So I reported back there to Musgrove Park, still wearing the hospital blues, like as though we was, and we had a whale of a time, really. They my wound was leaking still, still weeping, and I couldn't walk properly. And they used to have what they call, there were cyanus, like little holes would appear discharging, and they would have an exploration of sinus, have me in, knock me out, and dig in there to see if, and they found an eyelet from the boot. After all that time, and I'd had loads of x-rays, they think it was an eyelet from the boot that they fished out that had been in the core of the ankle. It stopped a lot of this trouble. A wonderful time. They allowed us out, and we never got on a bus. We never had to pay. If we went in a restaurant and had a meal, every time we went to the counter to pay, someone in that restaurant had paid the bill. Someone we didn't know, another customer, had paid the bill. And girls from, there's a shirt factory in Taunton, Van Hoosen, and the girls there would hire a coach, come into the hospital and pick up a coach load of lads and take them out for the day, drive around in the Quantock Hills and lunch in a club or something somewhere. It was wonderful. The people of England, because it wasn't peculiar to us only, it went on all over the place. They were so happy the war was over and so grateful to the lads that had been injured. And at all events, in December 1946, they decided then I could come home. And
December 46 or 45?
46. December 45, I was down at Newquay.
Yeah,
December 46, they decided that they'd done all they could for me and that I was discharged. And I was discharged with a 40% disablement, which wasn't, that's the equivalent to having a foot off. That's the
and
same
you
pension.
You got a pension to that level, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, 40%. And
how did you feel about that pension?
Well, I didn't. I was a bit peeved because it wasn't very much. It was only about 18 shillings or something. And I couldn't live on it, so I had to get work. And there was no mercy for us then, mind. You had to get work. You had to find a job.
And how did you manage it?
Well, I poked around and I tried to get in with the Forestry Commission. And I went to for an interview at Bristol, but they thought I was still limping, and they didn't like the idea of that. So I didn't get in with the Forestry Commission. I hadn't got a terribly good education, only elementary, and so in the end, we settled. I got married incidentally. I met my wife, and I married in 1944. I met her in 1947, the next year after I was discharged, and she was in the Women's Land Army, my wife. And up at Moreton Hampstead, and we got married in 1949. But
1949.
I'd had a couple of odd jobs down at Newton Abbott as in office work and one thing another. It was fairly light, but because it was, they knew I was a discharged soldier with pension, and they didn't offer much money. And I expect they were subsidising them days to employ discharged personnel. I don't know, but I never got any money of any consequence. So after we were married, my wife come from London, so we went to London to live, and I spent 28 years up there. But I
did you find work there?
Yes, quite easy. I went in what they call production control, which was all office work, and I seemed to pick it up fairly quickly. I worked for Joseph Lucas. And Joseph, I done fairly well. Joseph Lucas the firm sent me to Birmingham to be trained on a Lucas management system. And I didn't earn a fortune, but I earned quite good money. And I then worked for GECs, and I had quite a good job with GECs. And I returned here in 1981. We had this little bungalow built while we were up there in the 74, I think it was. They built it. And we moved back down in 1981. And
what's your pension now? Do you still get a pension for that?
I still get a pension now, yeah. 80% now.
And do you feel that's more adequate now?
Yes, it is. Yes, I do. It helps me now. And yet it's a drawback. Because I get an old age pension, I get a small pension from GECs, and I get this 80% from the army and my disability, but they total that, and until quite recently they didn't disallow it on my poll tax, so I had to pay my poll tax. But fortunately Newton Abbott now, or Team Bridge, most councils now have disallowed the war pensions, so I now get a bit of help with my poll tax. But I mean, I get no top up. They keep saying to me there's money, you know, they keep sending me a form about applying, you should have £200 odd, apply for it, but they count that war pension plus my little GEC pension plus my old age pension, and I paid in this SERPs, you know, pay as you earn, graduated, and so I get over the top. But I'm quite happy. I'm not moaning, no.
Thank you very much.